Welcome to the HSP podcast. I'm Julie Bieland, a licensed psychotherapist specializing in high sensitivity and neurodiversity. Today we have a special guest, Val Nelson, a career and business coach who focuses on supporting introverts and highly sensitive individuals. Val will be sharing valuable insights on considering self-employment and offering practical advice and actionable steps to make the journey manageable. Val is not only our guest today, but also a valuable member of our heart-centered business group within the sensitive empowerment community, and I highly encourage you to join us there. For many of us as sensitive people, the idea of starting our own businesses is appealing and yet kind of daunting, and we understand those kinds of challenges and uncertainties, and we want to create a range of resources that are here to support you. Inside our business group, you have access to live business events with guest experts, access to our comprehensive business library of previous trainings, opportunities for referrals and collaboration, support and goal setting, and chances to share and be inspired by each other. And really connecting with HSPs in business can be really transformative. And additional perks are a free listing on the HSP Practitioners Directory, HSPs to Interview Directory, and the HSPs in Business Directory, because we want people to be able to find you. And opportunities to publish articles on the HSP blog, reaching thousands globally, as well as hosting your own events for free exposure. And you might even be featured on the HSP podcast. We're dedicated to helping HSPs thrive in their entrepreneurial journey, and we invite you to be a part of this supportive community. You can join us at sensitivecommunity.com, and we'll put that in the show notes too. I'll turn it over to Val now. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Here we are. I'm Val Nelson. I'm a career and business coach, especially for introverts and highly sensitive people. And our presentation today, what we're here for, is talking about self-employment and for folks considering it or already starting with self-employment, but just wondering how are highly sensitive people making it work? It can be a little too confusing. So I thought I'd answer some questions and also just present some basics that might be helpful and hopefully calming so that it doesn't feel so scary. All right, so here's a little bit about me. You can find me at valnelson.com. That way, if you have to leave early, you know how to reach out and, you know, pop me a question or something that way, feel free to email me. And you can just find a lot more resources. I'm going to be touching on things and not able to get into the real details. So I have a blog where I get into more answering questions about self-employment. So there's courses, groups, and all kinds of resources there around self-employment and other things. I want to talk about just how it can feel so scary. For a lot of people, it feels as while they're still in a job, the idea of switching to self-employment can feel like you have to jump off a cliff, and maybe even feels like there's sharks down there. So it can just feel, this is how it felt for me, and this is how it seems to feel for a lot of people. So if you have that feeling, it's pretty common. And mostly it's because it's an unknown. It doesn't mean it has to be that way. It can actually be more like the second picture. And by the way, I did all the doodles in this. I love to just do silly little doodles. So that's where this comes from. It can actually feel more like you're walking across a bridge to another place that feels good. So it can feel that way. And so hopefully some of the things I'm going to share today can help it feel a little more like, oh, maybe there is step-by-step way to do it and doesn't have to feel like that cliff. I've been doing these interviews of people who have made the transition, and I asked everyone this question. What do you wish you had known before you had ventured into being fully self-employed? And what she said was, I wish I'd known how good it was. And I thought that was just an interesting response. And I would say the same thing too. It's like, it really can be so good. The freedom is so good. The ability to be your own boss can be so good, so that the scary parts become really worth it. So we'll get into making it feel less scary too. So just a reminder of what we'll do today. I'm going to go over the top three concerns that I hear related to self-employment, and that's in the realm of money, marketing, and your energy. And that energy piece these three questions come up, especially for introverts and highly sensitive people, but really for anybody thinking about self-employment, because there's so many myths about it. So I'm going to just touch on each of those and we can get into more details in the Q&A. And again, if you want to pop a note as we go, I might answer it during or save it for the Q&A part. So that's great if you want to do that. So after that, after the brief presentation, we're going to have a Q&A around any self-employment topic via the chat. And then we'll have some discussion time without the recording on. All right, so let's get into that first worry, the income stability. That's kind of how it comes out a lot is, but I'm not going to have stable income. How is that really going to work? So the money stuff, right? So that image, that doodle I drew is sort of like capturing this sort of like, this feels like a big tangle and how is this going to work? How is it ever going to grow into anything? And it can also feel like lots of ups and downs, this idea of this instability, you know, and so, but we want something to sprout, you know, so how's that really going to work? Feels messy. First of all, it just does feel messy and life is messy. So that drawing is actually kind of normal. So it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you if it feels like that, but can be less tangly. One thing I'll say about income stability off the bat is we actually have a lot of myths about employment being the stable one and self-employment being the unstable way of working. And to me, the best analogy for this is renting our home versus owning a home. So when I was renting, I was at the mercy of the landlord taking care of things like the furnace. And I actually had a fire one time because the landlord did not take care of the furnace. And after that, I was like, I need to own my home. I need to be in charge of my own living situation so that I can be in charge of taking care of the furnace and all those things. So I did become a homeowner, scraped by and saved up, and it felt so scary because I was single at the time. I did not have the money that I thought it took. It felt like this impossible thing at the time. But I did it and it felt amazing. Like, oh my God, I'm free and I don't have to depend on a landlord and all that. And the self-employment journey has felt similar. I really was at the mercy of employers. And, you know, you can get laid off at any time or they can tell you what to do and it's miserable and leads to burnout. And it's not as stable as it's supposed to be. And whereas self-employment, you're more in charge, you can take care of things and pivot and create it and make it better for you and make it work for your energy. You can work from home. You get to choose. So to me, there's so many more stable things about self-employment in reality, but there's still things you have to think about. It's not the same as just getting a paycheck every week, that's for sure. One thing you need in order for it to not feel like you're jumping into a pool of sharks is an income plan for the interim. And the interim can be longer than you want it to be and longer than it seems like it should be, but it actually does just take a long time most of the time. So you need some sort of income for in the meantime. And that can be in the form of 2 years worth of savings. I mean, not 2 years of savings, but 2 years of in, you know, something to live on for 2 years until you can turn to the income from the business. And now 2 years, I'm just pulling that out of a hat really, but I like to imagine it may take 2 years of really being focused on that business. If it's part-time, it's going to take longer. So that's just a reality. It can take a long time. So have some income in the meantime. What a lot of people do is they have their day job or they switch to part-time or more contract work that can be more flexible, you know, or savings or whatever. There's lots of different ways. It can look many different ways. You do need a plan. Another thing that helps is do the math. Like, what am I going to need to charge? You know, how much can I actually do in a week? Does that really add up over time to what I need to make? A lot of people do not do the math and it just stays fuzzy in their heads. When I finally sat down and did the math, I was actually doing better than I thought. And it wasn't like I was getting rich. It was just, I learned how to reduce my expenses significantly during this phase so that I had a minimum income that I wanted to get to so that I had a nice milestone to shoot for that felt doable. And when I saw that I was getting close to that, it was so relieving. And then I could see how I could grow from there. There was something about sitting down and doing some simple math. You might need to get some help for that just to think through all the expenses you might not have thought of and stuff. But boy, that can be calming. So I'll leave it at that for now, but you can ask questions. And the fourth thing is just how self-employed people deal with the so-called ups and downs of self-employment is you plan for ups and downs. You don't just assume that your income is going to be the same every week. It's not. There's going to be months where it's really slow and you're going to think, oh no, what is this business going to work? But that's normal. You know, maybe June, you never get much, but you know, November you do. And so you learn to work with that. And there's ways to smooth things out. My business income is actually quite stable, but in the beginning it was pretty choppy and you had to learn to ride those waves, but you learn to see over time. After a couple of years, you start to get used to how it goes. You just build it into your prices, like to cover those times. So that's part of what you have to do. Okay, so that's that first worry, and we can come back to it in the Q&A, but let's get into the second big one, which is how do you get clients? So I know some of you already are serving clients in your business that you're trying to grow, but there's still questions around like, well, am I going to be able to get enough or whatever? So let's talk about some things that make this easier. One is start with practice clients. This is how most people can begin. You build your confidence through practicing. You know, maybe it's barter, maybe it's free, maybe you'd only charge $10 a session. Whatever it is that gets you in the game and gets those muscles working and building your confidence. Like, oh yeah, this is valuable. People like this. And that makes it that much easier to describe it on your website or wherever in a conversation, and that much easier to put a price tag on it and to know that it has value and to learn to receive for that. So practicing is huge, and then it makes all the other steps much easier. Also, a big one that I like to say to people, especially introverts and highly sensitive people, let go of the marketing shoulds. There's so many stories about how it has to look. You have to be on Instagram. You have to do certain kind of webinar, or that was when I was first starting, it was like, you have to do webinars. It was everywhere, you know, so every webinar was about how to do webinars. And I felt like, I don't want to do webinars. So I learned to just trust my own instincts and to be like, okay, I don't have to do that. I can find some other way. So I had to just turn to what am I good at, you know? And for me, one of the things that came was, well, actually I like doing in-person workshops. Because I had some experience with that in the past. And so I went to the local library where they let you, you know, use a room for free, and they helped promote the event. And I was able to do a workshop at the local library that got me a lot of publicity and new clients. It was amazing how well that worked, because I went based on what I already knew how to do and was comfortable with, without worrying about what other people said I needed to do. And I'll talk more about some specifics in a moment. But that's the basic principle, is to let go of all that stuff and then tune into what works for you and what you're good at and what feels good. And a mindset I want to suggest, instead of sales and marketing and I must get clients, think more, oh, I want to connect, you know, from my heart to their heart. I have something that's important to me. It might be important to them too. And it's just a matter of letting them know and inviting them to try it out. So you don't have to convince anything. You just turn to what you're already good at. Highly sensitive people are great at heart-to-heart connection. You know how to do this. So it's a matter of seeing how to use that as a way to connect. That's all it is. It's heart-to-heart connection. So let me get really specific. So here's some client attraction options that I think of as HSP and introvert friendly. These are not the only ones, but one of the questions I got in advance was, what are some options that don't include social media. So none of these are about social media for the most part. So let's look. Here's one that most people miss that's actually incredibly effective. Send an email to people who already know you, they already trust you. Let them know what you're doing. Let them know you're open for business and who they should refer, and ask them to think of people to refer to you. You might think all your friends and family already know what you're doing, but they don't. And they would probably love to help. And they'd probably love to have an email that they can easily forward to people. So that one step, you don't even need a website or anything. That one step is a great way to get your first few clients, or at any time this can work, especially if you have a new offer or whatever. Another one is, like I said, you're already good at heart-to-heart connection, people one-on-one connection. So why not work with that? One-on-one networking. Say you see somebody, you know, here in the sensitive empowerment community that you're like, wow, that's interesting. Well, then ask them, hey, let's have a Zoom chat. That's all I'm talking about. You see someone you want to connect with, let yourself take that extra little step of asking for it. You know, that's a small ask. I know you can handle it. You might feel like, I don't want to bother people, but it's not. People like being invited. So why not? The worst that happens is they say, I'm too busy. Another form of one-on-one connections is podcast interviews. And you can probably find, you know, an online course to learn about how to get on podcast interviews. And that can be a great way, because then the two of you are spreading the word about the podcast interview. Let me back up to that networking piece. So why just randomly talk to somebody that you just like what they're up to? You never know. I find that following your heart to talk to people just kind of goes somewhere. It either just boosts your day, which is nice, or they might end up referring to you. You might really hit it off and do some collaborative thing. I don't know. I just find that following my heart for who I want to connect with has really paid off. So that's been both of those ways of using my one-on-one connection strength have been very worthwhile for me, including number one. I got my first few clients from just sending an email out. The third one is connecting to referral partners. So maybe someone does something similar to you or has a similar audience, but you know, they don't do what you do. So you guys might talk to each other and say, well, hey, let's make sure we get to know each other's work so that we can more easily make referrals. I do that a lot. I get plenty of people inquiring about my services that are not actually needing what I do. So I'm like, oh, I love having someone else I can refer to. Like Alex, who's here today, I referred someone to her recently because I was like, I think this would be really good for her. So that's another thing that can come out of that one-on-one networking. Another one, and this has been big for me, is being findable online. I love that word, findable. It's like you don't have to go get, but you can make sure that Google can easily know what you're about, what you're up to. There's things you can do on your website, what you might call search engine optimization or SEO. That's something that I've put some time into and it has made a huge difference. If you search coach for introverts or coach for HSPs, you're probably going to find me in the first 10 or so listings. Depends on where you are, because location matters too. But I've put some time into that and I could really sit back. I could go on vacation for a month and I would not do anything marketing wise, but I can keep getting inquiries because of the effort I put into that. It's all very behind the scenes, really introvert friendly. So that has worked well for me. YouTube is another way to get found, making videos. I also listed niche directories, getting in a directory where your people would tend to look. If HSPs are your audience, make sure you're in the sensitive empowerment directory that Julie has. That has been really useful for me. I only joined the community a few months ago and I've already had people contact me because of that listing. So that's been well worth it. If you have a different niche, and there's other places also to get found for HSPs, but if you have another niche and you're curious, like, well, how do I find the directory for that? Just do a search for your what you want to be found for, like wellness coach for HSPs or whatever. See what comes up. Maybe there's a directory there you can get listed in. I actually wrote a blog post more in detail about being found in Google. and one about, you know, getting in directories. So you can go to valnelson.com and do a search for those words like Google listing or directories. Okay. So just a tip on that. Really can go a long way. A fifth client attraction option that does not include social media typically is hosting events and workshops. Like I said, I mentioned I did some workshops at the local library. So that's one. Of course, you might use social media to help promote these, but that's different than like constantly putting stuff in social media just to get found through that. I find that social media is a nice adjunct to other like real life kind of things or ways to connect with people in real life. And I don't just mean real life, like in person, it could be over Zoom or something. So you might host events, workshops, if you like that, if that's a strength of yours. Now, all of it is based on what fits for you. I don't believe in shoulds. I believe in principles of following what fits for you. And there's so many other options. So that's what I have to say about client attraction for now. And we'll, again, you can ask more in the Q&A. So let's move on to worry number three that keeps coming up is, what about the time and energy? I mean, is self-employment going to be exhausting, especially when I'm in transition and I still have a day job and or I've got kids? I mean, how do people juggle all that, especially if you're a highly sensitive person? It's easy to get exhausted. So what about that? So here's four things that really help. One is, if you're doing something you're passionate about, that gives you energy. So I have been more energized by far doing my own business than I ever was in a job. So that right there is huge. But you have to choose something you care about, not just something you think the market will bear. By the way, there's a question that came in that I'd like to answer. She said, did you do a paid workshop at a public library or was it more of a free introduction to your work? It was a free workshop. And then I mentioned what I do. So I had handouts and it was actually called Networking Secrets from an Ex-Wallflower. So we really got into that. And that was a very popular topic. So I had some help. So that was really helpful. All right, so back to this. So choosing what you do really matters for your energy. It's got to align with your values and your strengths. The second thing is that interim income thing, you know, maybe that what I call a bridge job is the thing that's going to help you get there. The choosing what you do really matters. That needs to at least be neutral on your energy, which means it's got to at least not conflict with your values because that's draining. And it's at least not got a call on things that are not your strengths. So it needs to align with what you're already good at and what you know, at least is neutral, you know? If you're doing something that's really draining, you may need to leave that job and get a different bridge job in order to start up your business. That's what I had to do. I was in something very draining and full-time. I switched to something a little bit less stressful, more meaningful, and less hours. And that helped. I still had to do some other things to take care and make sure that I chose well. So that was a beginning. Also, the other thing about your time and energy that I've already talked about is like, you've got to choose your marketing methods and your, you know, the way you run your business really well has to align with who you are. And finally, on what helps with your time and energy is letting in support. Oh my gosh, I tried so hard to do it on my own and resisted letting in support. And boy, was it exhausting and did not work. As soon as I started letting in help, like when I did that library workshop, I partnered with somebody to help me do that. In fact, what we did was a barter. She helped me put it together. She helped me get publicity. It was amazing. And she set up refreshments and stuff, which was not necessary, but I thought it was nice. And in exchange, I gave her some coaching. So it was a win-win for us. I got to practice coaching more in the beginning and I got some help for that workshop. Wow, it made such a difference to have that it really convinced me, like, I have got to have a team. I am so much more effective when I have that support. And I still, I regularly turn to other people in my field. I regularly keep I have a coach. I've got so much support built in today, and it really just helps me each step of the way. So this is the question portion. So I'm going to keep the recording on, but if as things percolate, you know, you can pop something in the chat and I'd love to respond to that while we still have the recording on. I'm just going to read this comment. Your story about the house is so familiar. I left a big practice and had no freedom to choose my hours or salary. I did a transition job for a year and worked part-time to build my practice. Great. I started my own practice slowly and made significantly more on my own than being employed as a therapist. Interesting. It only took a year to build up the money, up to money-wise, but I shared an office, cut down my expenses, and figured out how to save money. Yeah, you just get creative. That's awesome. I also want to leave my contact info up if you need to go, but also just to remind you where you can find some more details about some of this. So Tara has questions. I'm thinking about things like insurances, health, liability, et cetera. Did you build these types of things into your initial business plan? How did you create a business plan? Ooh, there's a lot there. I'll try to address some of that. For starters, I have a blog post, again, valnelson.com. There's one specifically about all those self-employment logistics where I got into exactly the things you might need to know, what I actually did. So that's there, you know, like what about health insurance and liability insurance and stuff like that? So in the beginning, I was single. I didn't have anyone else to turn to for my health insurance. So it was like at the time, so I live in Massachusetts and we had what became Obamacare later. So there was a way for me to tap into the state system that was income-based to get health insurance. Now, outside of the United States, most countries cover health insurance. So in the United States, the whole health insurance thing when you become self-employed is a very big deal. But luckily, the way it is now, it's income-based. So that's true for all over the United States. You can tap into that. And it still is, but once you do make enough money, it's very expensive. And you work it into your business expenses. It is considered a business expense. It helps you on your taxes too. Liability insurance. I did get liability insurance and you can get that sometimes within your field. So if you go to a regular insurance agent, it's probably very costly because they're thinking bricks and mortar business. So it's more expensive, but I got one that was specifically geared for coaches. So it's more simple. It only covers what a coach would need. Did I build it into my initial business plan? I doubt I was that planful in the beginning. That's why I say get some help. There's free business counseling available throughout the United States. I don't know about other places, but where they can help you with things like business plans and what do you need to know. Now, if you don't need a business loan, like, you know, that's more of a brick and mortar business or something where you need inventory or whatever, where you probably do need a loan. If you need a business loan, then you need a good business plan, you know, and probably some help to do that with an accountant or whatever. So since it was just me and I was just trying to cover my own, you know, myself without all that kind of overhead, I didn't need that kind of business plan. You can do a one-page business plan with just like, what is it? How much do you charge? How are you going to get clients? And that sort of thing. So yes, I do believe in a plan, but it can be a one-page plan unless you're going for a loan. So hopefully that's helpful. Anything else? Or maybe you can say like, think about, okay, let's do this. Think for a moment about where are the areas where you feel like drained or stuck? And if you're willing to share about that sticky area, you don't have to have a question. You might just have a comment. Mary Ellen asks if I use social media at all. In the beginning, that was something that I actually enjoyed. And so I've been in business for 13 years. So 13 years ago, Facebook was still kind of fun and interesting. And so was Twitter. And so those were kind of big at the time. And I actually knew a lot about it. So it was a great place for me to be visible. And it did help with some networking. But things have changed. I feel drained when I go into those things. And I also was on LinkedIn, but that wasn't nearly as robust as it is now. Now I actually like LinkedIn and there's more going on there. And I'm kind of doing very little on anything else. And even with LinkedIn, I only go in about once a week or twice a week. So social media is not a core part of my marketing at all. It's more like, it's interesting. It's a way to stay in touch with some people. So I find it useful. It's not a core piece. For some people, it is. Oh yeah, a niche question. Thank you, Ryan. Someone else sent one in too. I do think there's, for some people, social media can be great, but I would learn about it. If you decide that Instagram or Pinterest or whatever is for you, then take a course in how to make it. Don't just like play around and spend a lot of time and expect that to do anything. You really need to learn about like how do business people use these things. There's very specific things they do to make that work. So if you enjoy it, and if so, that's an important piece, right? I keep saying that. If you enjoy it and it feels energizing, then it's likely going to be a good method for you. If it feels like a have to and a draining thing, it's probably not actually going to help you. So focus on something else. So here's another question. What about niche? I think the hardest thing about starting is finding the right focus. I have so many ideas and interests and benefit from trying them on for a while versus choosing one to start and see where things go. All right. I'm a big fan of niche for now and just go. And don't think of it as something that's confining. Think of it as something that just helps you focus. Like if HSPs are a niche, that's actually a fantastic niche. Very in demand. Lots of people are searching for stuff online about that. I mean, millions and millions of people. So it's not too narrow of a niche if that's something you're considering. And why not just focus some energy there, like making sure you're in Julie's directory and things like that and see how it goes. It doesn't mean you can't serve non-HSPs. It doesn't mean you're stuck with that niche forever. So I hope that helps a little. That's related to an earlier question I got about niche and how do you know? And I'll add part of how you know is you can interview people. You can do one-on-one interviews, like kind of talk through like, here's what I'm thinking of offering. What do you think of this? So in the beginning, I thought about my introvert niche back at the beginning of my business. And but a lot of people were like, oh, that's not going to work. This was before it was more in the news. And I was like, no, I really think there's something there. And someone said to me, well, why don't you interview people? And I'm like, but I'm an introvert. I already know what they need. And he was like, no, you don't. You're you. You need to, you're already on one side of something. You're here to help. So you need to know what your audience is needing and what words would they use. And so I was like, oh yeah. So interviewing people, I did a focus group. And once again, on my blog, I did a whole article about how to do a focus group to help you understand your audience, which is so simple. It's just a funny word for getting a group of people together to talk about this topic. But I walked you through how do you find people and what questions to ask and stuff. So that can really help around niche and that. So I hope that's helpful. Someone says, I'm still figuring out what I can do with my experience. I get very hung up on not being formally qualified. That's a big question that maybe we'll save for the discussion portion, if you're willing. I'm trying to think of a quick way to answer. Everyone has that basically. So it's not you. It's a inner critic kind of thing. Most likely that probably comes from dominant culture messages and all that, something to work with, but not let it stop you. Let's see. Another couple of questions. When you suggest getting help, could you speak to what kind of help you got and in what order? Like in this transition period, it is really hard to estimate income, self-employment tax, and understand what can be a business expense. Health insurance. Wow. Good. So is working with an accountant and or tax advisor a priority? I think so. Actually, that post I mentioned about business logistics, and that would be a good way to use the search and say business or self-employment logistics in the search. I think in there, I talked about what are the priority kind of things. An accountant would be probably a priority, or it doesn't even have to be a CPA. It can be, a bookkeeper to just kind of help you set up the books and help answer some questions. And they can also help you think through, like, what are the expenses you might not be thinking about? So I think that is a really great early type of support. That was one of the first things I did. Talking to other coaches as a coach was also one of the first things I did. It's huge to have community around your own, you know, your own peer group community. So another person said, I'm on Instagram and it automatically posts to Facebook. And then I put the same thing on LinkedIn. Yeah, it's a way to be on multiple places, but it's really about the interaction, I think, and taking it deeper. So whichever, if you're not getting results from what you're doing, I would definitely, you know, take a course or something. I have another thing you can search on my site is, you know, I think it's online business courses or something like that. I have a page of recommended courses and it includes something about Instagram, something about Facebook, and something about LinkedIn. So those are some ways to get some help on those. All right, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording and then we can just come on camera and discuss. All right, so that's this portion. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Val, for such incredible information. I can see that you could help so many people with your special focus on supporting the highly sensitive and introverted. And we hope that you found this information valuable and that you know that there's a lot of support for you, that you can start or grow your business and be successful. We really want to help you succeed. So please come and join our heart-centered business group. And you can also sign up for my free webinar that is about growing a heart-centered business that you love and reaching financial freedom. And I share a lot of the things that I do as a sensitive person to take care of myself. How do we take care of ourselves? How do we have the business that we want and have the balance that we want and all those things? And you can find all the links to everything that I've been talking about in the show notes at hsppodcast.com, and we hope you'll share this episode and leave Val a comment. Also, she would love to hear from you and check out her website as well. So take good care, everybody.